121-0855-WC, Amalia Reyes, appellant by Matthew Coleman versus the Illinois Workers' Compensation Commission, Labor Temps Incorporated, appellee by Jack Shanahan.
Mr. Coleman, you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, justices, counsel. My name is Matthew Coleman, and I represent the claimant in this matter, Ms. Amalia Reyes. The issue today is whether the commission's decision regarding the causation and extent of the claimant's lumbar condition was against the manifest weight of the evidence.
Counsel, before you get into that, your opponent has a motion to strike several sections of your brief and argument on vocational assessment and maintenance benefits by reason of your failure to raise either issue between the arbitrator and the commission. Now, I've looked at the stipulation sheet and I've looked at the transcript, and I can't find where you raised either of those issues before the arbitrator or commission. Can you point me to something?
What I can say, Justice Hoffman, is no, I can't point to anything within the stip sheet, nor within the issue being raised. However, what I'm requesting today is a modification of the permanency award and a finding regarding the causation of the claimant's post-surgical status. Now, both maintenance as well as vocational assessments are rooted in Section 8A of the Act, and upon a hearing, a claimant is entitled to open benefits under Section 8A of the Act.
But don't you have to raise this before the commission so that the commission can rule on it? I mean, you never raised it. They filed the motion to strike, and quite frankly, as I look at this thing, their motion strikes well taken. You just simply didn't raise it, so you can't raise it for the first time on appeal.
With regard to the maintenance benefits as well as vocational, I concede, Your Honor, that those were not raised until the filing of this brief. However, I will rely on my position that all benefits that I'm claiming stem from Section 8A of the Act, and if there is a modification and a finding of a permanent disability, then 8A would control.
Well, wait a minute. If we were to do that, wouldn't we have to send it back to the commission for them to make a determination as to what the proper benefits are?
Only if, upon requesting the vocational assessment and demanding it, that it was denied, then I could make that argument to the commission. Okay. Just as if a case had been an award for benefits on permanency had been complete and a need for further medical treatment was required, and that was denied by the respondent following a decision from the commission.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead on your other issues.
Now, it's well settled that in resolving conflicts of medical evidence, it's the province of the commission to resolve such, and such findings will not be disturbed unless it is contrary to the manifest weight of the evidence. This case requires such modification, justices. To be clear, this was not a 19B8A hearing for authorization of a surgery where there was a difference of opinions between the treater and the Section 12 examiner regarding the impression of the MRI. It's not that. And that's because the surgery in this case had been done. So what we really have is the opinion of Dr. Levin versus Dr. Erickson's actual visual intraoperative findings. The commission ignored Dr. Erickson's intraoperative findings and, in fact, made no mention of it in its decision at all. Why is that important? because the intraoperative findings of Erickson note, quote, we indeed did find comminuted fragments in the central and paracentral location on the right side. He further observed that after removing the fragments from the nerve, he observed the nerve pulsate freely. That's important. And what are we left at? Let's look at the medical evidence as a whole. First, we have a clean chain of events. A 39-year-old woman with no history of lumbar complaints, able to work full duty in a job which required constant turning, twisting, bending under time constraints. An injury, a real twisting injury, which had sufficient enough force to cause immediate swelling to the claimant's right ankle, and she was immediately placed on non-weight-bearing status. The very next day, claimant presents with back complaints, and from that time, consistently reports low back pain radiating into the right buttock and posterior thigh. We have an MRI study which notes an L4, L5, 5 millimeter focal posterior central disc protrusion. An intraoperative finding from Erickson, which actually visualized the disc fragment impinging on the nerve. Erickson removing it and seeing it pulsate freely, and relief noted by the claimant's subjective reports following the surgery.
Mr. Coleman, if I can interject one question, and certainly you can rely on and argue the chain of events, are there any medical causation opinions presented in this case that are relevant to or address the claimant's lumbar spine condition as revealed by the December 12, 2012 MRI? Are there any causation opinions regarding that?
There is the response from Dr. Erickson, in which he comments as to causation, and he comments on Dr. Levin's report. So Dr. Levin makes some flippant statements from his April 23rd, 2013 report. And we've heard all of this before. He states the claimant's subjective complaints are out of proportion to the objective orthopedic pathology. He states her reports are not substantiated by true objective pathology.
Counsel, that wasn't the question you were asked. You were asked, is there a causation opinion from a medical doctor anywhere in this record that her injuries are causally related to the event for which she seeks benefits? Anywhere? I know he doesn't agree, Erickson doesn't agree with Levin's report and Levin's assessment, but that's not the question. The question is there a causation opinion?
My response is the claimant is presenting this on a chain of events. So no, Your Honor.
Okay, so there's no causation opinion. Go ahead.
We have a clean chain of events, and we have versus the opinion of Dr. Levin, who basically calls the claimant a liar, right? But it's important to note that Dr. Levin made these comments on April 23rd, 2013 about the objective pathology, admittedly, before he ever reviewed the films to determine the presence of objective pathology. So now with that in mind, the only way to reasonably deny benefits would be for the commission to make a finding that the claimant was being untruthful in her reports of symptoms to her treaters, as well as in her testimony. But it made no such finding, Your Honors. In fact, it did completely the opposite, because it found that the claimant was credible with regard to her right foot injury and awarded all benefits stemming from that. So in light of the medical evidence as a whole, this time taking into consideration the actual intraoperative findings, it's clear that the commission's decision is manifestly unreasonable and should be modified to take into consideration the claimant's post-operative status as causally related. In terms of permanency, the claimant has been given 10-pound lifting restrictions from Dr. Erickson. She tried and was unable to work even as a cleaning person. Under the circumstances, and she is a primarily Spanish-speaking individual with limited education, we prosecuted this as a 8D2 loss of trade. So I've outlined in my brief it with a suggestion that an award be entered in favor of the claimant as 60% man as a whole for loss of trade. So respectfully, I request that the decision of the circuit court be reversed and the decision of the commission be modified, making a finding of causation beyond the April 23rd report of Dr. Levin, awarding medical benefits for such treatment, including the surgery, as well as a modification of the permanency benefit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Any questions from the court? None. Okay, you'll have time in reply. Mr. Shanahan, you may respond.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Jack Shanahan on behalf of the defendant, Labor Temps. The arguments raised in the brief by plaintiff as well as before the court today are simply a look at this evidence, appellate court, and you will see that plaintiffs have gotten everything I'm asking for. The standard of review, however, is that the court has to look at whether the commission's decision is supportable by any evidence in the record. And for the plaintiff to convince you otherwise, he has to show that the commission's decision is against the manifest weight of the evidence, not the they should have relied on this evidence instead of this evidence standard. And I don't believe the arguments raised at any point go toward establishing anything close to that standard. What the commission did rely on in the record is the report of the accident, which was not disputed by the respondent, nor was the initial treatment and lost time. And plaintiff helpfully lays out on two occasions in his statement of facts the progression of treatment and complaints at Concentra from the point of the injury to January 11 of 2013. And the court will note from reviewing the record or even plaintiff's brief that petitioner's back strain condition resolved, as these things do, over the course of several weeks. They initially got a little worse. She had some increased pain, and then they got better. By January 13, she's reporting trace occasional soreness. The doctor who had been treating her throughout this says that she has a resolved lumbar strain as of January 11, 2013. That's the evidence that the commission had. The respondent set up an exam for the petitioner for February of 2013, in which one can assume that Dr. Levin would have had the same opinion that he did when she finally showed up 2 months later after missing two appointments. So by January 11 of 2013 and shortly thereafter, barring the delay caused by petitioner's failure to appear for two exams, Dr. Levin comes to the same conclusion, which is amply demonstrated by the evidence. He also reviewed the MRI, which did not show a herniation. He reviewed the films to supplement his initial review of the report. And it's also worth noting, counsel goes to the April 13 examination, 2013 IME date. Dr. Erickson examined the petitioner in April of 2013 as well, agreed with Dr. Levin's assessment of the MRI as to the lack of disc herniation or involvement, and further stated that she is not a surgical candidate. Now, petitioner continues on a course of treatment. She's not back to work. 2 months later, when he sees her, he operates on her. So we have a complete gap in treatment right there. But even if plaintiff wants to rely on Dr. Erickson, he agreed with Dr. Levin in April of 2013. There's no disc herniation. There's no need for surgery. That's essentially the ball game here. The petitioner did have an ankle injury that for which she continued to treat. The commission, arbitrator and commission made that award. Respondent has paid that. There is ample evidence in the record to support the commission's decision, and the commission could also rely on the fact that petitioner's testimony is completely contradicted by, not corroborated by, the contemporaneous consenter records. She said as of January 11 of 2013, she was on crutches, she was in incredible pain. There is a note in November of 2012 that she was no longer on crutches. And again, the outline of treatment from November to December to January of 2013 demonstrates the objective medical evidence and the conclusions by Dr. Bott at Concentra that her lumbar spine strain had resolved. The commission's award is entirely in line with the record. There is evidence, ample evidence to support it. And on behalf of the respondent defendant labor temps, we would ask that you affirm the circuit court and commission's decisions in all respects. Thank you.
Any questions from the court?
No.
No. Thank you, Mr. Shanahan. Mr. Coleman, you may reply. Mr. Coleman.
Be clear, I just want to be clear once again is that claimant reported consistent symptoms on the right side and the low back. The intraoperative findings corroborate that. She will be left with these outstanding bills regardless. And I will rely, or I will end how I generally start and point out that the Workers' Compensation Act is remedial in nature. And this was a claimant who socioeconomic status in which she presented to certain doctors requires, you know, the remedial nature of the act. With that, thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Coleman. Thank you, counsel, both for your arguments in this matter. It will be taken under advisement.